You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, August 16th, 2011. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. We're going to give a special shout-out tonight. Our producer, Bree O'Connor, had a baby, a wonderful girl named Sisu. And at only 7 days old, she had to get out of the house, took a walk, came out to Roberta's in Bushwick, where we are, and just said hello to the baby. It's a beautiful little girl. I don't know how you measure these things, but she's probably like eight pounds cute. With black. Right, Jen?
Oh, yeah. She's adorable.
Yay. Yeah.
And jumping
Yay.
In. So we got Jen Swertman from Blind Tiger. We got Will Stevens from BeerManias.com. We got Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn Brewery here on Beer Sessions Radio. We're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. Check out GreatBrewers.com to learn more about beer. And supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 34 New York City beer bars and the home of our radio. If you want to check us out, go to GoodBeerSeal.com. So, guys, it's been quite an interesting week. A lot of things going on in the world of beer.
What's going on?
Well, I heard that... Beer Sessions Radio recorded some shows up in Cooperstown last week.
I heard that
too. Come out. And what else is going on in the world of beer, Garrett? What have you been up to?
I've been up to a lot. We just actually doubled the size of the brewery again in the last few weeks. So that's been pretty exciting. I'm having a weird day because I just forgot to put my headphones on. But I'll just keep one headphone on for the time being. That will do fine for me. And, you know, we're launching the book in a few weeks, and it's kind of like a little bit of the calm before the storm right now. But I'm surprised at how much activity there still is, you know, in mid-August. It used to be that things got quiet in August, at least for a little while.
Not for beer.
Yeah, you thought people were at the beach or something, but they're drinking and they're sending me emails. Like lots of them. I'm like, go to the beach.
Well,
you know, come back in a couple
of
weeks.
They've got their iPhones on the beach now.
That's
true.
So
they email you from the beach.
I believe they probably do.
So the book that's coming out is the Oxford Companion.
The Oxford Companion to Beer, yeah.
That is so exciting. I can't wait to see it.
Me either. and at a certain point, believe me, I thought I would never say that. I said, I don't want to see this ever again. Or any part thereof, but it's going to be a cool thing.
Have passed and
exactly.
It's time.
You know, I have a little distance now, and I can really see it for what it is.
And it's pretty darn good.
Well, there's a lot of beer talent in this room right now. We also have, to me, one of the finest beer websites in New York, and probably soon in America. It's BeerManias.com. Will Stevens. Will, you came out of nowhere. And suddenly you're as known as the Alstrom Brothers from Beer Advocate, or perhaps more known than that. Tell us a little bit how you started BeerManias.com, because I think it's a fabulous site, and I know that there's thousands of bars posting on it their beer lists every week or every day. This is a crazy idea. How did you come out of nowhere and do this?
It was basically one of those services that we created to meet our own need. My brother and I were sitting around one night planning to go out in the city, and we were very particular in trying to find a specific beer on tap, and we used Google and we kind of browsed to see if there were any resources to find a specific beer at a specific place.
What beer were you looking for?
It was Stone Arrogant Bastard, which 3 or 4 years ago was extremely hard to find in the city. Now it's a little bit easier. But the basic idea is we set up a website that allows bars, restaurants, and stores to maintain their own page on our website and update it whenever they want. And these days we have over 100 places updating their beer menu in New York City alone every day. So we have a group of 100.
Honestly, when you came out, I thought this was ridiculous. I thought it was like another type of like way to get advertising. I didn't really believe that you had this mission. And after about 6 months, every time I Googled, every night I used to do my beer list at Jimmy's number 43. And then we changed the beers, and I would Google the beer, make sure I had all the information. And for a long time, only Beer Advocate Rate Beer would come up. And after about 6 months of you having beermenus.com, beermenus.com came up equal to or ahead of the other sites for information about particular beers. And I still didn't believe in you guys. I got to know you better. We've done some events together. And I really think that your heart is in beer. And I think that you are a real asset to the whole craft beer
community. Well, you do understand that your line now is, I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Yeah.
And I'm the bad guy. But we're buddies.
Yeah, I mean, we found, I'm sure Garrett can confirm, but we found that the number one question that breweries and distributors would get is where can I find your beer? And obviously it's a very difficult thing to figure out, because bars like yours at Jimmy's, you know, you change your selection practically every hour of every day. So some people have tried to accomplish this problem by allowing people to say, I found this beer here. Some people have tried to, like distributors have tried to use their inventory tracking system to say these people ordered this beer. But when it comes down to it, the bars and restaurants really know the best themselves. And we've gotten to a point where a lot of beer bars in the city are even just buying a laptop to put behind the bars so that they can update it every time a tap changes.
That's pretty cool. Now, do you have any kind of almost requirement that if a bar wants to be, you know, on there, that they update on a regular basis? Because, I mean, do you have any way of regulating a list getting stale? Because, you know, somebody may actually go pretty far out of their way if they're chasing something down. And, you know, they got on the subway, they went three stops up, they walked five blocks, and they go in. And, oh, sure, it was here, you know, 5 days ago, but I've been busy and I haven't had time to update. How do you handle that? Because, I mean, obviously, you're the friends of the bar people, but you also need real-time information.
Yeah, we definitely encourage people to call ahead if they have their heart set on something. But every time a business logs in to update their page, we update a timestamp on their page so it says when they last updated. And if a page hasn't been updated in the last, I think it's 3 months right now on the regular website version, they don't appear on our website. And we have a mobile version, which is pretty cool. You can type in a beer and it'll say the places that have it based on where you are. So if
That's
I type
great.
In...
Jenna, have you used this at Blind Tiger and the other bars that you work at?
Well, I'm not really in charge of those things, so I'm not exactly sure how updated we are. My question is, well, I actually have two questions, but one of them is that stamp of when it was updated, is that visible to the person going to the site?
Yes.
Do they get to see that it was updated 2 months ago so they can kind of know whether or not to...
Yeah, it's at the top of the page, and it's really on the front end of the site, so basically anyone in the public, any drinker can see it.
And my other question is, has this expanded to other cities? Are you now...
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. Right now, since we launched, we decided to kind of saturate markets, and we started in New York, and we're here just in New York for a year, and then we started adding additional cities, and right now we cover New York, Philly, Chicago, San Francisco, and LA.
That's great.
And we've been up for 3 years, and we're about to release a brand new version of the site, which is going to allow businesses anywhere in the world to use the site. And there's kind of an additional feature that's making that possible. We're going to make the experience on the site 100% location-based. So when you come to our website, with the new version, you'll put in your location. You can say, I'm at Roberta's, and it'll say basically all the content on the website will be customized based on that. So if you type in a beer, it'll bring up the beer page, and it'll show you all the places based on how far they are from your current location. And the same for events or for places.
Now, do you find people are using the site or, you know, and I don't know how you capture this information, but do you think that people are using the site more to chase, you know, or look for specific beers? Or do you think they're more looking at the site to figure out, are these my kind of people and do they have a decent list? In which case, you know, it doesn't matter that much if someone has good taste and they have a overall good selection. You look at Jimmy's number 43 a week ago, and he may not have the same beer as he has on today, but you know that Jimmy keeps a good beer selection, and then that's why you're going.
I'd say, from what I've witnessed, obviously it's difficult to track, but from what I've witnessed, people definitely are looking for obscure beers. The funny case in point is if a page on beer menus is a little bit out of date and they have some really highly ranked beer, we'll get emails or calls from that business saying, like, how do I update my page? I have all these people coming in looking for this beer and I don't have it. That's one way that we've found out.
All right. And we have Julie Barnard, who is our beer enthusiast.
So I
got a feeling. So you use beermenus.com, don't you?
I do. And actually, I was wondering, because I don't think I've ever seen it. Do you have the ability to track? So if I logged in, I could see the top five beers that have been searched. And so it might be something I haven't had to drink before and go, oh, what is this? And then I can literally trail it back.
So you're wondering if we could give you suggestions based on your own behavior? Or
just actually anybody. So what would the top five in the last day have been, or the top 10? And maybe there could be two or three on there I've never had before, and I can just hit one of them and see where they're located and track it down too.
Right. Originally we had kind of a popular beers section, but it was largely skewed a bit based on search engines, and we had all these kind of strange beers like Molson Triple X being the most popular. But right now we just have a category for new beers.
Thank you, Garrett. Thank you.
No, I was just like, that's because they have a room full of 500 monkeys, and what these monkeys do.
So Molson Triple X.
But yeah, for the most part, right now our website is very much kind of objective. There are a lot of sites out there that provide room for commentary from drinkers and more social elements, and what we do is kind of more of a service to the industry to
just
help
a straight
find
database.
Well, what did you bring us? You brought a really cool beer that's knocking me on my butt.
I did.
Yeah.
Oh wait, this is no, not right. You're pointing towards mine. I'm sorry,
Julie. We'll get to you, Julie.
That beer.
I actually brought two different versions of the same beer for a vertical tasting. It's the Captain Lawrence Nor'easter, which is their winter warmer. It's 12% beer. It's got elderberries in it, and it's aged in bourbon barrels. And I have a 2008 and a 2009.
Well,
thank
awesome.
You for bringing that in. I haven't had that one.
All right,
in a while.
Well, I had that. And Garrett, what did you bring today? I see a beautiful bee beer here.
That is just a bottle conditioned version that we have around the house, so to speak, of our big IPA called Blast.
Great.
You know, I don't think I don't think I brought this in to you before. You've had Blast, you may have sold Blast before, but there are a lot of beers that we actually put out on draft that are not available in bottles to the general public, but we actually have in house our own bottle conditioned versions. Sometimes we have barrel aged versions, it really depends. So there are at least 15, 16, 17 different beers that are not available to the general public that are actually kind of our personal stash, and we'll go out and do events every once in a while. We did one last night at the Diamond near the brewery. It's called Ghost Bottle Night, and it's basically, you know, me and the brewing team. There were six of us last night. We went out and we poured beers for an hour, and then we left. And that's basically it. No big speech, whatever else. These are four beers that you're not going to see anyplace else, and boom, that's it. So it's just a bit of fun. And this is one of the things that we like to bring out sometimes.
Well, we had the first Nor'easter. What did we drink first, Will?
We first had the batch number 3, which I believe is the 2008.
And let's try the other one too, and say a few things about it.
Yeah.
Garrett, you meet so many different brewers from around the world. Times I've seen you at Brooklyn Brewery, I've seen you with the guys from Balladine, Del Borgo. Is it Jim Harrison from Thornbridge?
Yep.
And do you know Scott Vaccaro from Captain Lawrence?
Oh yeah, quite well. Making really nice beer.
And what do you think about the styles of beer that he makes? You think he's still figuring things out, or does he kind of have his thing down?
No, I think Scott comes to what he's doing with an unusual skill set. I mean, he worked at Sierra for years. So, you know, even though he's a relatively young guy, he's not as young as he looks, and he's smarter than your average brewer who just threw the doors open, you know, to start a new brewery. And I think that that's really served him well. I think he has a good sense of balance and what he wants to do. So, you know, the beers are pretty good coming straight out the door on the first day, and that's not seen all that often
as you'd like to see.
No,
sometimes.
No, I mean, a lot of people, don't realize. I know you meet a lot of home brewers, and they make great beer at home, and they think that, you know, making beer in a brewery is kind of the same as making it at home. And, you know, you as a chef know that's exactly like cooking food at home and thinking that running a restaurant is the same thing. They're not even really related. So they're barely related. A guy who's actually spent time, you know, at a serious brewery before has a massive advantage over somebody who doesn't.
Did he go to brewing school also? I don't know where he went, but I think he also, like, trained formally.
Oh, we'll have to, if you haven't had Scott in here, you'll have to get him in here next time.
He learned a lot, you know, by the time he was in his early 30s or whenever.
Another thing that's cool about everyone in this room, we're all involved in a special event for New York Craft Beer Week's coming up September 16th to September 24th. And Beer Sessions Radio is producing the New York City Brewers Choice event, year two. And we got Garrett as, you may not know this, but you're the keynote speaker, Garrett.
Congratulations.
I know you've got, you're a busy man.
They just point, like, go over there and do you.
But Scott Ficarra will be there. And Will from beermenus.com is our lead promotions on it right now. They're running the tickets at beermenus.com. And Julie Barnard brought us, we will taste later in the show, a bottle from Maine Beer Company, which our good friend Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger, who's also curating the New York City Brewers Choice, has convinced to come down from Maine for the New York City Brewers Choice. So we're going to have a wide range of brewers. We have guys from Ballast Point in California. We have Garrett coming in. We've got Maine Beer Company. We've got local guys like Barrier coming. It's going to be a really great event, and it's definitely the featured key event of New York City.
It was a lot of fun last year.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, this is
really
awesome.
Great,
and you know, we really did it, and we all did it together. It's like finally the beer community came together, and this is a great event.
I'll be there.
It's an awesome event.
Yeah,
I'm always there.
Definitely
one not to be missed.
My favorite part about the craft beer industry is that the brewers are so accessible, and it's awesome to have them all in one room and to be able to drink with them.
I mean, it's cool. We had over 20 brewers last year, and some new guys coming in, and a lot of the return brewers. I mean, you were part of that last year, Will. What did you think of it? I mean, why was that so unique for New York? I mean, why hasn't New York done this for 20 years?
I just think it's always a challenge to get all the brewers in one room, and not everyone has prioritized that, but from the perspective of a beer geek, that's definitely my favorite thing, to drink with the person who made it and ask them why they did things a certain way.
Plus, it was a cozier event. I mean, there were a lot of people there. I don't know how many tickets were sold, but you didn't feel like you were standing in a 20-minute line to get a taste of beer and wave your hand at a brewer and you had to get out of the way. You had a chance to really interact and ask all your questions, and that doesn't happen on some of these events that have taken place in New York in the last few years. Beer's so popular, they just sell tickets until there's no tomorrow, and then, you know, everyone kind of suffers from it.
And there's still, right now in New York City, relatively few brewers. I remember, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you know, there were more than a dozen breweries in New York City, you know, and, you know, there are a number of reasons why that's no longer the case. But the fact that you only have, you know, what, five breweries within the city limits means that, you know, you're then pulling people from the outside. You have an event in the evening. So you're really taking a person who is often physically exhausted at the end of the day and saying, now I want you to get in a car and fight traffic into New York City and, like, you know, stand in front of a crowd and talk to people for 3 or 4 hours. And I'm sure once they get there and they do it, everybody has a great time, and we all know that we will. But, you know, boy, it is you are swimming upstream when it comes to do that. So when you see brewers out at events like that, I'm not talking about me. It's easy for me. I'm here. But when you see brewers coming in from outside, you got the guys from, like, Greenport coming in and actually driving in 2 hours, you know, to get here. You know, I just kind of hope everybody appreciates it, because, you know, these guys were already exhausted when they left.
It's also true. I mean, a lot of these guys have tiny startup operations where they're only a couple. I mean, it's like a 2 or 3 man show, And so for someone to take time off and step away from the brewery, and, you know, it's a big deal. So whenever these tiny, like, nano breweries make a showing, it's something we all need to appreciate and support them.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with our guests and find out what Julie has in store for us on Beer Sessions Radio. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm here with Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn Brewery, Will Stevens, BeerMenus.com, Jen Swartman, and Julie Barnard. It's a great show tonight. We're talking about New York City Brewers' Choice September 22nd at a city winery. It's part of New York City Craft Beer Week. Well, we're tasting a beer that, as far as I know, Dave Broderick discovered. Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger. It's main beer company that Julie Barnard brought in. Dave is out there sourcing some really interesting small breweries to be part of this event, New York City Brewers' Choice. Julie, how did you get this bottle? It's Maine Beer Company. That's all I know about it.
It is. So I was actually up in Maine 2 weeks ago for Joshua M. Bernstein's wedding. And, of course, Josh can't have can't go into any town without hitting up every beer. So we were at Allagash, we were at Maine. We really explored, thanks to him, and went to Maine one day, the Maine Brewing Company.
And you were deep in the woods, right?
Deep in the woods.
Deep in the woods.
Really deep in the woods. It's like it's an industrial park. And
you heard a crackle, and you turned around, and...
It truly is.
Cheers to Maine Beer.
Cheers. Hey.
It's really called the Maine Beer Company.
It really is, and it's two brothers, and their space is... It's a clean and wonderful, and they're so nice and enthusiastic, and it's kind of like, you know, you can go someplace else to pick up the bottles, but you're like, no, like, I want to pick them up from this guy.
Now, where physically is it? What town is it in?
It's in Portland, Maine, and it's North Portland. We had a war going because half of us were staying in South Portland and half were in North. So it was SoPo v. NoPo. So I believe it was North Portland, but they're literally around the corner from Allagash, from Allagash's new space.
Okay.
And it was awesome. They're so nice and just happy. And it's like, thank you for coming in and drinking our beer. And brought back actually a case.
Jen Swartman, have you been up to Portland, Maine?
No, I haven't been to that one. I'm headed to the other one. I'm going to Portland, Oregon on Monday, but that's a different story. Right. So, yeah. No, but I would love to make it up there, and I don't know how many breweries they have. Does anyone know? I mean...
Have you been to Portland, Maine, Garrett?
I have. I've been up there a few times, and I've had wonderful beer. I spend a really nice afternoon with some of the guys at Allagash, you know, checking out their Lambic project, and we kind of went through a bunch of the barrels. You know, tasting that a while back. So, you know, had a really nice dinner at Front Street.
Oh, yeah.
I've done some events at Novare Res, which is a great bar.
You know, so there's a lot of good stuff. And yes, probably the best lobster roll I've ever had. Okay.
Well, it just comes out of the ocean and goes into your roll. I mean, yeah, it's like, there it is.
Oh, that.
But where Maine Brewery is, it's literally brewing company. There's four. Well, it's Maine and two others, and then Allagash is across the street.
There's two others.
Is
Shipyard there?
I don't know if Shipyard is there.
I'm pretty sure they are there. I think
they are there.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been there.
I'm actually going through my photos right now to try and find the photos from it.
David Geary, right? Is he the same location? Geary's?
Is Geary there?
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly in Maine. Now, whether he's in Portland or not, you know, I hate to say, you know, even though Dave's a Paladin, he's my Facebook friend, I actually don't know whether he's actually
there. So, Will from Beer Menus, do you have a Maine Beer Menus?
Soon we will.
Apparently, there's a great need.
Yeah, I'm supposed
to. What
I need is a beer map. I need to be able to like say, okay, where's this beer from? Is there? Wait.
There is an awesome website for mapping. It's beermapping.com.
Really?
Yeah, it's awesome. And yeah,
is that the competition?
Well, it tells you where the businesses are. It helps you find the place, but not exactly.
All I want to know is, like, how soon is it till I get the goggles? You know, the ones where I put the goggles on, and every time I look at a storefront, like, the beer list actually comes up in front of my eyes on the left-hand side in green.
A little hologram.
Yeah, exactly.
Corner, yeah. I'm just thinking that Portland, Maine, it sounds to me, I haven't been there yet, but it sounds like it really is an East Coast beer destination for people. You know, you want to go to a beautiful little town and... You know, drink some great beer and have
Portland, Maine's a beautiful place. You know, it's its own community. I actually grew up in a town in Massachusetts. We have a direct summer train. You can hop on it and it goes right to Portland, Maine.
But it's kind of cool. Beer and mead and cider.
Yeah.
I mean, it really.
I mean, it's a seasonal town. You know,
it's
you don't really want to go there in the winter, but it's one of those rare places. It's pretty neat.
I think because it's so
tempting. It on the list.
Right.
That's all.
Let's go there. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. The Portland Tourism Bureau is on line one. They're a little angry about your thing about their fall foliage.
Oh, seasonal. Yeah.
It's so temperate. You know, it's so temperate there. Everybody's still in jeans and they're like,
But let's talk about this beer. I mean, this beer, this is what I love about their craft beer scene is that this beer, as of like a few weeks ago, I'd never heard of. Dave Broderick told me about them. They're coming to New York. And then Julie Barnard walks in with a bottle, and I'm drinking and I'm loving it.
Last night, and I saw two of their beers on the shelf, and so I was
interested.
I was like, kind of held it in my hand. I was like, I don't know this one, and I was actually there for another purpose, buying a lot of familiar stuff instead, and so I put it back, but it triggered my curiosity, and then she brought it in, so it was all meant to be.
Yeah, as far as I know, it's only in Maine and New Hampshire and New York.
How many different beers have you had from them, Julie?
Four. They only
do really?
Four.
Wow. Okay.
And how long have they been open?
You know, I actually don't know how long they've been open. I know they were a smaller production, and they moved into a bigger space.
I want Garrett to tell me about this beer.
About the beer that we just tasted.
Yeah,
it's interesting because it has, you know, what I would call, even though I don't think it's a Belgian yeast strain, it has a very sort of farmhouse quality about it. You know, sort of an unfiltered pale ale. I'm not sure whether it's re-fermented in the bottle because I haven't read about it. But it's very, very dry, kind of flinty. You know, has a distinct yeast character. You know, but you know, it's definitely more yeast driven. Than say hop driven. There's no big hop aroma. There's some hops. There's bitterness, but there's not a big sort of floral or piney or whatever else hop aroma. And in that regard, it almost reminds me of a saison, even though it's not done with a Belgian yeast strain. It tastes like a British ale yeast strain, but you know, it's not really malt forward. It's not really hop forward. It's actually more yeasty. You know, which you know, gives it, I think, a kind of an appealing quality.
So
I want a big hunk of bread with it.
I don't know if you noticed the label, but it's the Peeper Ale, and if you look underneath, it's a little stylized drawing of a frog, and it used to be called Spring Peeper. So it's a frog. There's actually a Maine frog called the Spring Peeper, and they named it after that.
So cute.
It's cute. I mean,
it's a beautiful
Zoe.
I'll tell you about Maine. When you drive through New England, you're in Connecticut, everyone has nice cars. In Massachusetts, they have all small economy cars, some of them dented and rusted from... And in New Hampshire, forget them. And all of a sudden, you see these pickup trucks, you know, with like vintage pickup trucks. They're all from Maine. So it's definitely a different world up there. And I think we need to go up there. Portland, Maine, definitely.
It's a very nice world.
Wow. And why did you go up there, Julie? Just for fun? Are you checking out beers?
That was Joshua M. Bernstein's wedding.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Destination. He
Julie
loves
did
Maine.
The desserts.
Really?
I did the desserts.
Do you guys all know Josh?
Yeah, I know Josh.
He writes for
I've been
Imbibe,
seeing him for a while. Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen him.
He's been on the show. He's a very cool guy.
Yeah, he's now officially 2 weeks married. His wife is awesome.
So let's make a toast to, you know, to life and Josh Bernstein.
Hey,
here, man.
Josh Bernstein.
Bri O'Connor's little baby and Josh Bernstein. Awesome.
Wow. Cheers.
All right. Well, let's open. Garrett brought in this blast beer. This is pretty cool. Wow.
So this probably been in the bottle for, I don't know, I think mid-June or thereabouts. So, you know, we don't bottle it all that that often. But Blast, we've actually been making for about 8 years or so. And in some places, especially next door to us at Brooklyn Bowl, it's been particularly popular.
You've been making this beer for 8 years?
Yeah, I've been making it for 8 years. But a lot of people, you know, have never seen it because, you know, we were so constrained in our, you know, in our old space, which we've recently expanded.
Where did it go before?
You know, pretty much to our bar at the weekend and, like, you know, a few surrounding people. But most people didn't even know the beer existed. And it kind of grew out of a late night smack talking session between me and some of the friendly, but, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning kind of smack talking session between me and a bunch of brewers from the West Coast, you know. And
it smells like heaven, Garrett.
Yeah. And they were like, oh, you guys don't have any hoppy beers in the East. And I'm like, you guys wouldn't even know German or British hops if they came and bit you. You know, that's how we're good words. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do it our way. And our way is that we're halfway between the hop fields of Kent and the hop fields of Yakima, Washington. So this is actually half British hops and half American hops.
Nice.
And so it doesn't have that pure citrus kind of thing that you see in a lot of other beers out there. It has also some of the stone fruit, apricot kind of stuff that you get, the earthier qualities of the British hops. Like Northdown, Challenger, East Kent, Golding, etc. And for a beer that's 8.3, 8.4%, it's relatively dry, and I think it's pretty drinkable.
Garrett, so I haven't had it yet, but just smelling it, I'm from Washington State, so this smells like, this is home. This is my home in a glass.
It does smell like sticking your head in a hot pocket. But
This is great.
Yeah, it's got 70 IBUs, you know, and but what I really like about it is I think that despite that you say 70 IBUs whatever, but I think it's a really balanced beer and it's quite drinkable. In fact, it's dangerously drinkable because I think that I start drinking it and I would like to have 4 or 5 pints. Of course, that would shorten my evening considerably. So, you know, you have to be careful with it, but, I think drinkability is important. Even
about,
in really
I could definitely have one more. So how about a refill? On this
sure.
This is great. I'm going to cut you off for 1 second.
Okay.
This is really awesome.
It's really,
and
the carbonation.
I'm going to raise my glass before and toast to, I'm so happy that Brooklyn Brewery expanded and I'm so happy that you guys are doing all these great things because it's making New York a better place for beer.
Good
I
fun.
Also think that this bottle conditioned version just really showcases it in a way I haven't seen before because I have had it I think on cask and definitely on draft and it's just a little bit lighter. It doesn't have all, you don't taste as many nuances.
Yeah.
It ends up being a little rounded and this has got
bottle conditioning does give you something extra, you know, and it's been fascinating over the 5 years that we really have had, you know, this big bottle conditioning program. You know, that to kind of see what differences it brings about. Now, depending on what you do, it actually removes some flavors and adds others. So,
For example,
if you take our beer Local 2, we use a champagne re-fermentation yeast, which is used here as well. And what we've learned is that actually a beer that is re-fermented with a champagne yeast tends to be in some ways slightly less fruity, slightly less floral. Not less complex, but a little bit more streamlined, a little bit more driven. And actually, that particular beer, Local 2, we build the beer to be bigger than it's going to end up, you know, in the end. So that we don't want it to take into account in the recipe, right? We don't want the beer to be perfumey. So we've built it to a certain point, and the champagne yeast kind of streamlines it. So in some ways, this has the hop aroma isn't as big here as it is in the draft version, but it's also fruitier, and there are like 2 or 3 extra layers.
There's more in the mouth, though. There's more in the flavor on the palate.
Yeah,
because you're right. It might not have a lot of big hop aroma.
Garrett, are there any West Coast breweries that you really like? like that you wish you could make like them?
Oh, I mean, I think, I don't think that, anybody is really doing better work overall in the United States than, say, Russian River.
Nice.
What I like about what they're doing is that they are good in so many different areas. Vinny makes great sours, but also,
he's
making
thoughtful.
Great pale ales. And managed to do that with a certain level of humility, and giving back to the overall beer community. So, I think that, if you look around the world, he's one of those people that brewers in other countries are going to look up to, when it comes to doing great stuff. But there's a lot of good stuff, going on, out in the West Coast. I have to say, I've been really, amazed by the resurgence of Sierra Nevada, as a pretty mature brewery, and I say that as a mature brewery ourselves. But guys who were making great beer, but you didn't think of them as innovators because they hadn't done anything new in like 10 years or whatever else, and suddenly this sort of sunburst of stuff comes flying out, of them. And I know those guys have been like champing at the bit for a long time. And finally, they decided they were going to do a bunch of things. And,
they found like a new, like, it's almost like they got in touch with the youth by bringing in the whole beer school thing and really like talking to a lot of people who are out in the United States from coast to coast, are coming in with their own ideas and then cultivating that. And I think they're learning from it. And I think they're really like taking out, prior to that, they already had started putting out beers that we were seeing that were like really just great examples of old styles and then some new innovations. But now it's almost like they've found another youth in the industry by making contact.
Jen, did you go to beer school? Did you go to Sierra Nevada beer school?
I have not yet. I mean, I know all those guys and I've been to Sierra Nevada. I should. When I go home to visit the folks at Christmas, maybe I'll just hop on.
I could.
It's interesting. That's one view of it. I mean, my view, and I say this as the old guy, is totally different. I've known Steve Dressler for an awfully long time, and I don't think they'd rediscover it.
He's
a brewmaster.
He's
the day to day, guy,
so
running.
Steve Dressler at Sierra Nevada.
I mean, obviously, you've got, everything comes from, from Ken, who is in a way, kind of a genius. He's an engineer and a brewer, and, he's got so many, interdisciplines. But, Steve is the guy who you would see at the Craft Brewers Conference every year for the last however many years, in the rooms having conversations until 3 o'clock in the morning.
They've worked hard.
I guess I just look at it as an analogy to the town itself because it's a college town. And so it's like, the only reason why Chico is not completely backward is because it's always had this influx of the young people coming in to go to Chico State. And so in the same way, I kind of almost draw an analogy where, it's like a great thing to get, a lot of people coming to Chico, California. Nobody goes to Chico. It's on the 99.
As your counselor, I'm going to allow you to withdraw that statement, Your Honor. she was heavily influenced by the beer, and she never meant to insinuate that people of Chico would not in any...
Oh, I'm from there. It's like, I can tell the jokes because I'm one of them. No,
slow down.
I'm just saying.
Stop on Chico. Will, before we take a break, Will, tell us one of your favorite West Coast beers before we take a short break.
I really like the West Coast IPA from Green Flash.
Yeah, nice
Green
beer. Green
Flash.
Green Flash, nice beer.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes. And Jen Swartman is going to tell us about her special Green Flash experience on Beer Sessions Radio.
This is how how the story goes. She knows she's got everything that a woman needs to get a man. Yeah, yeah. How can she lose? What's up she use? 36, 24, 36. What a winning hand. Oh, she's a big house. She's night to night tag. Just letting it all hang out. And she's a brick house. I don't like lady stack. That's a fact. Ain't holding nothing back. Oh, she's a brick house. Yeah, she's the one, the only one, built like an Amazon. The clothes she wear, her sexy ways, make a old man wish for younger days.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com and supported by TheGoodBrewSeal.com. Wow, what a show we have tonight. And we've been directed to the West Coast Green Flash Brewery, and that brings us to Jen Swartman, who's going to tell you about a little thing she did in New York City. Jen,
yeah,
you are the coolest
before,
bartender in New York City.
Aww,
you work
shucks.
At several bars. Tell us where you work and what you did with Green Flash.
I, of course, work at the Blind Tiger on Saturdays and Sundays during the day, but I also work at Finelli's, second oldest bar in the city, on Friday afternoons. And then Bardi 2 is on 2nd Avenue between 8th and 9th in the East Village, and I'm going there tonight at 9 p.m. I work 9 until 4 a.m. on Tuesday and Wednesday. And so when my friends Mike Hinckley and Lisa Hinckley got in touch with me and said, we're going to be in town the week right after 4th of July. Can we follow you around and put our beer on tap at all three bars? I said, sure. So it was the birth of the Green Flash Jen Swartman Bar Tour. And it was a hoot. So that was earlier this summer. It was really fun. And, you know, turn some people who don't even think about beer onto some really great West Coast beer. And then got some of the beer geeks from Blind Tiger to actually venture out and travel around the city a little. So
I'm impressed. Who's impressed?
I'm impressed.
Any other breweries who want to do it, just let me know. I'm a fan of the idea. Like, let's get everyone drinking and moving around and you know, support some really great craftsmen.
I like Green Flash a lot. And I'm really glad that Will mentioned them. They're one of the, since I've had Jimmy's number 43, one of the real small breweries that I identified with a lot. And like so many of them, I mean, within a year or two, I couldn't get them anymore. And now it's like a ship. They say that a train is coming in with Green Flash.
They opened a
couple of kegs.
They did what Garrett did. I mean, they really did expand within the last few months. And now it's going to change the game. We're going to get more of their
beer. Yeah, I had a hard time getting them. For a while, when initially I was able to get them,
you know, there's a threshold. I'm sure, like, you know, well, you get to a point where you know you're weighing it, and then it's finally time to actually make the move. And
one thing I really respect about them is that you know, I've never had a bad pint or a bad bottle of that IPA. I mean, to be perfectly honest, there are a lot of breweries in the West Coast that send beer out here, and the beer is tired, and it's tired all the time, and it never really tastes good, and it's like, you know, it's really big thing online,
and we're all very opinionated and critical.
And a lot of them are relatively well known names. And so if you're in New York, you find that people fling beer into the market. As soon as they open the door, their beer is on the shelf, and they barely even have the beer on the shelf in their own town. And they don't come here, so they don't really, you know, they don't really know that their beer isn't fresh, and maybe they don't even care. Green Flash is a brewery where every time I've had a pint of Green Flash, it tastes really damn good. So
it's exactly what you expect it to be.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very impressed by them.
Me too.
There's going to be a moment of silence.
We're all silent. We're eating ice cream. Do you have ice cream?
So the reason we're eating ice cream is that, Julie, tell us a little bit about what you do.
What? You put custard in this.
No.
Why are we eating ice cream,
so
Julie?
Good. So I've kind of been playing around for a little bit, and I like ice cream, and I like beer, and I actually like spirits. So this is kind of a new twist on some things I've been doing with ice cream. And what you're eating right now is actually a Brooklyn chocolate stout ice cream.
Well, it's funny. I have made chocolate stout ice cream a bunch of times, and it's kind of a tradition at the Copenhagen Beer Festival. I make it in front of a crowd, and some of the guys who organize it are physicists, and they have access to liquid nitrogen. Now,
I love that.
So we get in front of a crowd, we get a big bowl, we pour in like 5 or 6 bottles of black chocolate stout, a whole bunch of egg yolks, heavy cream, and sugar. And egg yolks come in little individual packets in Denmark. So you open it up, and there's one egg yolk inside. It's unbelievable. But anyway, you go in there, and you start whisking, and you pour in the liquid nitrogen. There's a big puff of steam and everything else. And in about 45 seconds, there's like the best ice cream you ever had. And the
45 seconds?
Yeah, well, the alcohol doesn't even give the whole thing a problem, you know, as it normally does for setting up an ice cream. Alcohol causes, you know, the ice cream to melt or not.
So with a liquid nitrogen, you're able to flash freeze it.
Yeah, it's so cold. And then the nitrogen actually flashes off so that you have no bubbles, and it's kind of awesome. But that was really good, and I like your use of salt.
So do you use liquid nitrogen, Julie?
How did you do it, Julie? Come on.
You're still a little more old school, I imagine.
Very carefully.
I actually do a style. It's called Philadelphia style. I don't use eggs. And it's interesting that you mentioned the alcohol, because one of the benefits of actually a little bit of alcohol is if you are not making an alcohol-based sorbet, if you just do a tablespoon of a spirit, you don't get ice crystals, and you can actually kind of fake out
so you don't have texture. To like, I mean, okay, and if we're making ice cream, maybe would you first cook down the beer a little bit or make a syrup, or you don't have to do that stuff?
For the first one, which was a little homage to Garrett.
It was really good.
Thank you.
Merci.
That was not cooked down. That was not cooked off at all. It's, you know... It's Julie Love, a little bit of alcohol, you know, some tasty treats.
So you made what? The first ice cream was what?
So that was a Brooklyn chocolate stout ice cream.
So that was a beer ice cream.
But which was eggless, but the texture was, you probably couldn't tell that there wasn't any eggs in it.
And I really like your use of salt, which also kind of, you know, it changes your melt point, but... you managed to get a nice texture there, and the use of salt versus the chocolate, you know, was awesome. I think it was kind of perfect.
And you could taste that. Wait, Garrett, you could taste that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God. Oh, this is talking about the
Garrett's
best palate in America. Holy.
And it's funny because I don't use – so the salt I use comes from the Brooklyn Kitchen and the Meat Hook. It's their bulk salt that the butchers use, so it's a really large flake.
Right.
It's Brill. I use it for absolutely everything. It doesn't melt down.
And then, what did you just give us? Another beer ice cream.
So this is a raspberry lambic
ice cream.
And this took sorbet. This is a sorbet. And this took this is all hand. So it's macerated and blended and deseeded and strained and
delicious.
But if you smell it, it's like you're in a raspberry field rolling around. I mean, it really is a...
And you drew the raspberry flavor out of the lambic.
And what lambic did you use?
Thank you, Jen.
I don't want them.
Tell us, Jen. Tell us, Julie.
Lindemans.
Please. Okay.
I use the Lindemans. It's one of those that... I'm not going to get into it, but this was actually supposed to be something else, but a farmer did not deliver on... a paid promise yesterday, so 5 hours of tromping
through
the city.
Julie, that's crazy. Just tell us what the hell you're talking about.
No, so I was actually going to make a sour cherry lambic sorbet yesterday.
Okay.
And literally stood in the middle of Union Square going, okay, my farmer did not show up with my paid delivery of cherries, and I cannot do what I wanted to do. And I'm like... Well, there's raspberries.
And you were doing this for beer sessions.
For beer sessions.
You made it for us.
I made it
for baby.
You guys.
Fine.
So
absolutely.
The reason that Julie's on the show is that Julie represents that special person who's a beer enthusiast who knows more than us.
I could
you
not
do.
Come
you know
here
more
without
than the rest of us.
This. I could not. So I literally was in Union Square going, what could I pull out? Literally, and this is what I pulled out.
5 days later, she told the farmer that she had, in fact, fertilized his field and that he was no longer organic.
He and I are going to have when I find him, we're going to have a conversation about that. But
when he shows up to that Union Square,
exactly.
we'll have a conversation. But you know what, though? I actually really love this. I think it turned out really well. It's tasty.
You didn't even need to tell that story, but I'm glad you did.
Come on, that story was good.
How did you turn Lindemann's framboise?
It was
into ice cream.
into the sorbet. So again, sorbet, you know, it is eggless, and I did cook it down a little bit, just bring it down to get more of a raspberry flavor, kind of cook off the alcohol a little bit, and blended it with a lot of organic raspberries. The flavors.
So there are fruits.
Yeah. Oh no, there's a lot
of fruit. Okay.
Of course,
okay.
You can't. You know, it won't freeze. You have to have it mixed with something else, or it's just not.
Well, I will say this brings us to cooking with beer, and I have a feeling that that is a huge window to open. And
I do that. I cook a lot with beer.
Cooking with beer is cool.
You know, Pretty Things is actually one of my favorite things to cook with. The baby tree, cook that down, glaze a turkey. You are aces. Yeah, it's pretty tasty. I like to cook with booze. I like to create with booze. If I can put it into anything.
I know that Garrett.
Yeah, it's nice.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, from the Brooklyn Kitchen, you know, we do a thing. It's really an educational thing, mostly for our distributors and people like that. But we want to expand it in the future, and we call it the Brooklyn Brewery Cooking Team. And so it's me and two other brewers. We cook dinner for 25, 30 people, five courses paired to, you know, often special beers that, you know, that aren't available. And we make everything from scratch in front of the crowd. So we're doing like boneless quail stuff with foie gras and truffles and a duck demi-glace. We're doing pasta carbonara. You know, we're doing curried crab cake. And the thing is that a lot of people have never seen somebody make, say, a carbonara, you know, sauce or whatever else. So we're demoing every single part of the whole thing. You know, two of my guys, one of my guys in the brew house, who runs our lab, is also a brewer, used to be a cheesemaker. Another guy went to CIA and spent years in kitchens. And so everybody has, a mixed background. And, you know, personally, I'm a food geek. I'm a wine geek. I'm a cocktail geek. So, you know, last night I was out with Abe Scherner from Scolium Project, at an Austrian restaurant, drinking through somebody's collection of ridiculously.
Wait, slow down. What was the name of the restaurant?
It's called Eddie and the Wolf.
Eddie and the Wolf. Delicious. Hell yeah.
I love that place. I knew what place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ich möchte
East Village.
Ich möchte Schlitzkrapfen.
Well, Garrett, tell us the names of the guys you work with. Let's hear their names on the radio.
Oh, we got Tom Villa, Tom Price, Dan Moss. God, there's so many of them now. Got new name, a new guy, Robert Lemery. Our assistant brewmaster, Andrew Eady. Mary Wiles is our quality control director. We rescued her from 30 years in the clutches of big breweries. And she was doing great work for them, but she's having more fun with us. We've got a great team, and you know, and they're not all one discipline. You know, Tom Price has a beehive on the roof. You know, and he's making
the brewery?
Yeah, the brewery. He's making, you know, he's making honey on the roof.
This is bringing us back to one of the coolest things about New York City Brewers Choice, the featured event of Craft Beer Week, is also that every brewer is going to be matched with food. And Will, tell us another thing that you like about New York City Brewers Choice, and why you're hosting it, promoting it on beermenus.com.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most unique things about it is that it's a brew fest, but at the same time, it's very very small and personable. I think we're capping it at what?
Six? It's only 400, 500 tickets.
Right.
It's definitely a featured event of New York Craft Beer Week. Definitely.
Right. When you think of Brewfest, you think of kind of.
It's not a Brewfest, definitely.
It's not a Brewfest.
But there's food.
Yeah.
So we're talking. Okay. It's okay.
That's
Will.
The wrong word. But
Will, let's put it this way. Your beermenus.com speaks for you, and you do a great job with that. Garrett with Brooklyn Brewery kicks butt. Jen, anything special going on at Blind Tiger that we should know about?
Always.
Always. No, while I'm gone, I'm going on vacation, so I really am not paying attention. I'm sorry.
And Julie, any special events we should know about at some of your favorite Good Brew Seal bars?
Oh, well, Wandering Star just had one, so I'm not quite sure what's coming up.
All right, Wandering Star. Kudos to them. Definitely check out if you're around tomorrow night. Jimmy's number 43 has a really cool beer dinner with Chef Ryan Tate, formerly.
Is tomorrow your birthday?
Yes, it is. Sorry, guys.
Okay, here we go. Happy birthday to you.
Love
Happy birthday to you.
Garrett, It can do everything.
Happy birthday, dear
Never
Jimmy.
Ceases to amaze.
I know, he's amazing.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. And over the next 2 weeks,
moving right along.
Beer Sessions Radio will be airing two shows that were recorded at the Belgian Comes to Cooperstown at Omegang Brewery. So we'll see you next week, August 23rd and August 30th. We'll have recorded shows. You're going to love them. The awesome guests from Belgian Comes to Cooperstown. We'll be back on September 6th. I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com. Thanks again to everybody, GoodBeerSeal.com. And thanks to Garrett, Jen, Will, and Julie for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carbone. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. I'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Good night, and thank you!
It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes me feel mellow.
Whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much, vodka puts my mouth in gear. This little refrain should help me explain. As a matter of fact, I like beer.
He likes beer.
My wife often frowns when we're out on the town, and I'm wearing a suit and a tie. She's sipping vermouth, and she thinks I'm uncouth when I yell as the waiter goes by. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good.
Every spring at the end of kidding season, goat dairies across the country are faced with the question of what to do with their male bucklings. Because on a dairy farm, there's no role for a male. Often the most economical thing for these farmers to do is to cull the animals at birth or ship them off to the commodity market. Heritage Foods USA is embarking on a new project, No Goat Left Behind, looking to step in and fill this niche by creating a marketplace for these male bucklings. Visit us at www.heritagefoodsusa.com to learn more and to reserve your goat this coming October.
New York Night Train, Summer Soul Shindig, Rockaway Beach Party, featuring the 45 RPM soul magic of DJ Jonathan Tobin. Saturday, August 20th, 6 to 9 at Rippers, Boardwalk 86. Free party!